Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this beautiful Thursday here in Nashville. Darren McFarland, that's me, Willie Donick, is over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe is actually going to be doing the afternoon show with Floyd Reese today. So it'll be Chase and the GM, and that's coming up at 2 o'clock today following our show. Don't forget Tim Kirchen from ESPN. We'll talk some Major League Baseball with him and their return to play and their plans. That's coming up in an hour from now. But we've our next guest is somebody we've talked to over the years. We always enjoy our chats with Don Van Natta Jr., who is on the line with us. He'll be a part of ESPN's broadcast Sunday night. They have been getting your attention on Sunday nights, as we have certainly talked about it in the months here on this show. And this Sunday, it'll be the backstory on the decision. Of course, LeBron James, it's hard to believe that it's almost been a decade since that. And that will be at 8 o'clock our time, which is Central Time, on ESPN this Sunday night. And Don now joins us. Don, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are you today?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks for joining us, as always. We're certainly intrigued by this, and gosh, how time flies. It is hard to believe it's been almost 10 years since, LeBron James uttered those words that he was taking his talents to South Beach. So how did this all come about?
Well, we were intrigued to go back and find the backstory of the origin story, really how this particular episode was put together. That was one of the goals that we had with this particular episode. But we also wanted to see really what was the ramifications of that bad night of television. And we really wanted to see what the legacy of the show was for LeBron and his inner circle, for player empowerment, for storytelling by star athletes. But we had a lot of goals. We had really big ambitions that we were trying to meet with this particular episode. And I'm proud to say I think we met most of them. We found out a lot of new information on all those fronts.
So it's from things that I've seen and read on this that we're going to see on Sunday night, it sounds to me like then Commissioner David Stern was not a big fan of this broadcast, this decision being played out on ESPN. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. He did everything possible to try to get ESPN to cancel it. One of the things we found out that's new about that is he felt that ESPN was giving too much power to a single athlete. And he told John Skipper, who was then the head of content of ESPN, that the show should be canceled. What I found so fascinating is this is a business partner of ESPN asking ESPN to shut down a show because its most famous and its best athlete is taking too much control, and yet ESPN said no to a business partner.
Yeah.
And so I interviewed Skipper on camera, and he's very candid about it. He said, you know, Commissioner Stern did give us this advice, but we turned it down, and they went forward with the show anyway.
Wow. That is fascinating to me, because that is an interesting dynamic here on this, you know, station. You know, we're the flagship home of the Nashville Predators. We just signed a new deal to become the new home of Vanderbilt Athletics and the Nashville SC, our new MLS team. And so we understand that dynamic of working with a partner, and how sometimes, you know, the powers that be have to have uncomfortable conversations. And that is intriguing to me, how they handled that, because – and isn't it interesting too, Don, how – what you just laid out. I mean, the NBA is about their star power, right? It's about their players. They have probably a bigger voice and platform than any other sport out there, because they're very, very visible, and yet the commissioner was trying to stop this.
That's right. He was trying to stop it, and you're right. There's no doubt that of the major sports leagues in America, the NBA is best about really allowing their players to have a voice and to really step out and showcase them in really, you know, smart ways. And yet in that moment, in the summer of 2010, David Stern thought that ESPN was extending far too much power, far too much control to LeBron James, and wasn't able to stop it. And remember, the other dynamic of the show, I think a lot of people have forgotten, and we delve into this in the episode as well, is that 1 hour of time for the decision was donated by ESPN. It was given away for free to LeBron James and his business partner, Maverick Carter. They were then able to sell that time to sponsors, and the money that they raised through that was then donated by the LeBron James Family Foundation to the Boys and Girls Club of America. So again, you have John Skipper telling David Stern, in no uncertain terms, we're still going to do this. And yet the hour that we all watched, that absurdly bad hour of television in which LeBron was so awkward sitting in the chair, didn't even belong to ESPN. It belonged to LeBron James and Maverick Carter.
Wow. And so that important block of time, that hour of television, was basically a charitable donation. And yet, isn't it amazing, Don, how much grief LeBron took for that? And ESPN, you know, everybody really kind of pounded that they were using that as kind of the pawn to have this whole hour-long show, as you mentioned.
Yes, everybody got beaten up over that hour and the way it was handled. And, you know, when we go into that in the episode and sort of explore the reasons why, it turns out one of the new things we found out is how little preparation LeBron James did before he sat in that chair. You know, you would think that Maverick Carter and the people around him would spend a lot of time scripting him, getting him prepared for what he was going to say before an audience of 10 million people. But LeBron was at his basketball camp in Akron, his Nike-sponsored basketball camp in Akron, in the week leading up to it. He flew into Greenwich, Connecticut late that day. He ended up going to a house in Greenwich, Connecticut, an agent's house, which was kind of a green room for that broadcast. He had dinner with Kanye West and shot a bunch of promos, and then sat in the chair. And people around me said that LeBron never knew how many questions Jim Gray was going to ask. He thought it was going to be very just a, you know, little quick back and forth, and then be asked where he was going. And then Jim Gray ends up asking 23 questions before he asks the money question about, you know, what's your decision, and just some of the inane questions he asked. Are you still a nail biter? You know, did you bring your powder tonight? And all of that, you know, made for a really bad night of television that everybody got blamed for, LeBron James and ESPN.
We're talking to three-time Pulitzer Prize winner Don Van Natta, Jr. He has put together this program called Backstory, The Decision, on the LeBron James situation that took place almost 10 years ago. It premieres Sunday night at 8 o'clock Central Time on ESPN. And Don, how was it decided that Jim Gray would be the interviewer?
That was the idea of Maverick Carter, LeBron's business partner, and Ari Emanuel, who is a high-powered Hollywood agent. Maverick Carter and Emanuel and Jim Gray were all at an NBA Finals game in L.A., game two of the 2010 NBA Finals in Los Angeles. And at halftime, they spoke about this idea to do a one-hour broadcast. And so Jim Gray was part of the package then that Ari Emanuel brought to ESPN. Gray did not work for ESPN at the time. The folks at ESPN wanted one of their own to host the show, either the late, great Stuart Scott or Bob Lee. But it was non-negotiable. Again, all the shots for this were being called by LeBron and Maverick Carter. So Jim Gray was in that chair that night because that's who LeBron and Maverick Carter wanted to be in that chair.
What were the ratings like? As bad as the TV was, did a lot of people watch?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. So 10 million people watched it. It's the most watched studio show, non-live event show in the history of the network. At the moment at 9:28 Eastern, when LeBron says, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, 13 million people were watching. So it was a remarkable, massive audience that ESPN had never had before. But as I was saying to you guys, all during that time, ESPN's not benefiting from all of those viewers because that time had been donated to LeBron James. They got the benefit of a lot of people watching the sort of the pre-decision show, the run-up up to 9 Eastern, and then the post-show at 10 o'clock. There was a three-hour pre-show and a two-hour post-show for the one-hour decision. So it was 6 hours of programming built around LeBron James's decision to go to the Miami Heat.
How this is what fascinated me. At the time, I was thinking, how could he do all this and not go back to Cleveland? But he somehow kept this under wraps, right? There was all these rumors, but I don't know that anybody broke the story before he actually said it. How did they pull that off?
That's a great question. So, well, one of the fascinating things for me as a journalist was to kind of figure out whether ESPN's own reporters were possibly asked or told not to do their job, right, which is break news and to get scoops. And I asked Skipper that question, and in the show he answers it. He says, no, we told our reporters to continue to report it, and if they got the scoop and they were going to scoop LeBron, that was perfectly fine. Chris Broussard, who was an NBA insider and who I interview for this episode, he did report right before the decision started that his sources were telling him that it was likely going to be Miami, but he still had enough wiggle room where he said it could still be the Knicks or the Bulls. And he said that just moments before Stuart Scott threw it to Jim Gray and to LeBron James. It was just a very small circle of people that knew. The Cleveland Cavaliers didn't know what LeBron's decision was going to be until he was sitting in the chair. So LeBron's inner circle kept it very, very tight. And, you know, you think now, today, how quickly things break and how yes. hard it is to keep something like this a secret. That's another sort of remarkable thing that occurred 10 years ago, that LeBron and his camp was able to keep this, you know, under wraps so LeBron himself could break it.
Totally remarkable. And how long do you think he had his mind made up? How many days in advance? Had he just done it the night before, or how long was he keeping this secret?
Well, that's something else that I tried to figure out for this show. And of course, you know, there have been rumors all around the NBA that Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh wanted to get together and play together. I mean, these rumors dated all the way back to 2006 when they played together on the World Championship team. 2008, they were teammates on the Olympics team. They loved playing together. They had the opportunity to sign five-year max deals, and instead all three of them signed three-year extensions, which guaranteed the fact that all three of those players were going to be free agents in the summer of 2010. So one of the things we tried to investigate is how early did LeBron and D-Wade and Bosh get together and figure out, okay, in the summer of 2010, we're going to get together and play with the Miami Heat. That's a really hard thing to prove, but we delve into it somewhat in the episode. But when LeBron was asked by Jim Gray, you know, in the chair that night, when did you decide? He claims he decided that morning after speaking with his mom. So, again, we'll leave it to the viewers to decide whether that is true or not, or whether, because you know, since the day before, guys, it was announced that Bosh was going to play for the Heat and join up with D Wade. So a lot of people who sort of knew about all these rumors that the big three were going to get together and play in Miami, as soon as they heard that news, they're like, oh, okay, well, the night of the decision, LeBron's going to clearly say he's going to the Heat to play with his friends D. Wade and Chris Bosh.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this. Don, last thing for you from my end. I would assume in hearing you talk that it was somebody like LeBron's confidant, Maverick, as you said, that might have hatched this plan. But I'm reading the press release. I guess somebody had this idea outside of everybody's circle.
Yes, so that was one of the really fun, fascinating finds that we came up with. Jim Gray has insisted that it was his idea that he raised at the NBA Finals in June of 2010 to Maverick Carter and Ari Emanuel. It turns out the origin story goes all the way back to November 2009. A guy named Drew, I don't know his last name, just Drew from Columbus, Ohio, wrote an email to Bill Simmons in Bill Simmons's ESPN.com mailbag column and said LeBron should announce his free agency decision live on ABC. Bill Simmons then took that idea from his reader and brought it to Maverick Carter, Leon Rose, LeBron's agent, Worldwide West, LeBron's advisor, in February of 2010 during the Dallas All-Star Game weekend. And Simmons also pitched it. He was working at ESPN at the time, to ESPN executives. And for months, Simmons was trying to get Maverick and LeBron to do it. And then the idea really never went anywhere. And then suddenly this same idea comes up in June with Ari Emanuel, Jim Gray, and Maverick Carter at the NBA Finals. So we lay all that out in the episode. And it's just fascinating that, you know, you think about how bad that hour of television was, and then when you hear that a guy named Drew from Columbus, Ohio came up with the idea, maybe it makes a little sense, right, of why it was such a bad hour of television.
Oh, my gosh. All right, last thing, Don. Do we believe this was the start of kind of the, you know, joining forces in the NBA? Do we think, was this the decision and Bosh and Wade and LeBron the start for the next decade of what we would experience today in the NBA?
Yes.
Or do you believe it was somewhere else?
No, absolutely. And we spend a fair amount of time in the final segment of the episode that will debut Sunday night delving into that. I asked Mike Wilbon about it. What's the legacy of the decision for player empowerment, the building of super teams? As you guys know, you don't even need to be a free agent anymore if you want to switch teams, as Anthony Davis has done and other players have done, Jimmy Butler. Just demand a trade and build these super teams. And Wilbon says, absolutely. LeBron's fellow players saw how it worked and followed his lead in what he did in 2010. So there's all sorts of fascinating through lines. We didn't even get into storytelling. LeBron now has media companies, Spring Hill Entertainment and Uninterrupted, where he's the executive producer of his own shows. We draw a through line from what happened that night in the decision and the control he got from ESPN to now how he's selling shows to multiple networks. And there's all sorts of fascinating legacies that came out of the show that we delve into in this next episode of Backstory.
Wow. Don, if we, for all the people out there listening to this interview, if they were kind of on the fence, whether they were going to watch Sunday night or not, I think you just convinced them that they're going to watch, because this was fascinating. Thanks for doing this, as always. It's always good to catch up with you. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. And you guys be safe as well. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you. That is Don Van Atta Jr. Sunday night, 8 o'clock Central Time, the Backstory, the decision. Gosh, hard to believe. 10 years ago. It's all coming up on 10 years ago when LeBron James told the world, 10 million people watching that, gosh, that he was taking his talents to South Beach. We will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV Licensing.
Yes, TV Licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buzz of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.